From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The United States has currently vaccinated just over 25 million people out of 325 million against the COVID-19 virus. Vaccines, which were sold as a panacea by the previous administration, have not been produced and distributed as fast as people had hoped. Although the time frame of development, testing, and approval of the vaccine was lightning fast, now various reasons have slowed down the deployment of the shots in a country that in previous years was able to dispense 2 million flu shots a day. Why is the rollout of COVID-19 vaccines so slow? Joining me to help answer that question is my guest, Dean Baker, senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, which he is also the co-founder of. He's the author of several books, including Rigged: How Globalization and the Rules of the Modern Economy Were Structured to Make the Rich Richer. And his blog, Beat the Press, provides commentary on economic reporting. He's just been writing about the COVID-19 vaccine and why it's so slow to roll out. Welcome to the program, Dean.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So you've been writing about the fact that vaccine manufacturers, since last March, vaccine manufacturers really should be abandoning their demands for patents on the vaccines for the COVID-19 virus. Why are patents, in your view, and the sort of intellectual property rights that these companies seek, a big reason for the slow vaccine rollout?
Well, just to be clear, I'm not saying they should abandon their demands. We shouldn't give them a choice. I mean, I'm not surprised companies try to make as much money as they can. That's the norm. The problem is we're letting them do that at the expense of our health and the health of people in the world. So basically what I argue in several things that I've written and spoken about is that we should have taken steps to ensure that we had absolute maximum production of these vaccines all along. So even before they had completed their trials, the logic was then they went to phase three trials. This would have been back in July, I believe, with both Moderna and Pfizer. And phase three are the large trials that determine their safety and effectiveness. And that's what the Food and Drug Administration relies on for approval. We should have at that point began basically making enough vaccines, really not just for the US, but for the world. And the risk there, of course, is, well, maybe it'll turn out at the end of their period, their trials, that they're not ruled to be effective. The FDA, in other words, turns down the application, in which case maybe we spent $1 billion on vaccines that are worthless. Well, that's unfortunate, but given the enormous human and economic cost of the coronavirus, that would be a very small risk. In other words, if we took that bet and it went badly, that'd be a very, very small risk.
And indeed, we did do that on things like ventilators, right? Which we ended up, actually, the country ended up not needing.
That's right. We recognized people would die without ventilators, so we rushed to produce a huge number, and it turned out we had more than we needed, which, again, you don't want to waste money. I understand that, but it's much better you have the extra ventilators that people aren't going to need than you have people dying who could have otherwise been saved because of the ventilator. Now, patents come into this because patents meant that Moderna and Pfizer had full control over the production of these vaccines. So if we had said, no, the deal is that this technology is available for anyone to produce who wants to produce it. And again, I've gotten arguments with people, well, there's only something they could produce. If you could build one factory, you could build two, you could build three, you could build five. We have the technical expertise. So it's not as though that only the people at Pfizer could possibly produce a factory that will produce the Pfizer vaccine. That's absurd on its face. So we should have said, look, we're not going to allow patent monopolies to be an obstacle to saving people from the coronavirus. So we want you to make this technology available to everyone so that we could have 5-10 factories, whatever it might be. So we have both a large stockpile on hand at the point where it's actually approved. And also, again, insofar as we still need more, I forget the exact date it was approved, and sometime in November, at that point, we still need more. We could be producing 100, 200 million, 300 million a month, so that's not our limit on our ability to dispense vaccines.
Now, you point out in your writings that the U.S. has experienced distributing vaccines on a large scale. We do so every year with the flu shots. We've been able to dispense, you know, millions of flu shots a day. And this is, of course, a virus, the influenza virus you know, very, very deadly, but kills far fewer people than the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus. But of course, there's a big difference in how the flu vaccines have to be stored versus how the COVID-19 vaccines have to be stored. And conventional reporting suggests that it's that storage issue that's one of the main reasons why the vaccine rollout has been slow. That coupled with, of course, no preparation and no real plan by the Trump administration, and also the fact that states are scrambling to do really what should have been the job of the federal government. Is the issue of patents just one of many reasons, or where would you rank that on the reasons why the vaccine rollout has been so slow?
Well, it's a very high one. So you would have liked to have large stockpiles of the vaccines on hand at the point they're approved. And so that supply is never a limit. There are certainly places where supply is the limit. So in other words, you have states or cities that said, well, we could give out another, you know, 10,000 today or whatever it might be, but we don't have the vaccine sitting there. So you want the vaccine to be sitting there so that if they can distribute more, then, in other words, they have the personnel, they have the locations, that it's there and they could do it. So that's a really, really big part of the problem. But the other part is at least as inexcusable. I mean, it's almost as though, oh, you know, FDA approves the vaccine. They go, oh, what are we going to do with it? Instead, we should have had months of preparation where the federal government obviously has the key role in coordinating it. But of course, the state and local governments have to be literally on the spot in the sense that they're the ones saying, OK, here's the location. We're going to do it at this health center. We're going to do it at a pharmacy. We're going to open up a gym and have that available for people to come in. And we'll have 100 people giving out the vaccines. That wasn't done. And it's really kind of mind boggling. And a lot of the stuff I hear, I mean, one of the things that I heard, this is a public health person saying that, oh, we can't do it as quickly as with the flu vaccine because we have to explain to the people as they're giving the shot that they need two shots, they have to make an appointment. And again, I have no idea how much that's actually happened, but it's a little mind-boggling because that isn't the logical way to do it. You have the person giving the shot, you have someone else in the center. Let's say you have 10 people giving shots or five people, whatever it is. You have a person checking someone in and say, okay, when are you coming in for your next appointment? That's, you know, these are the sorts of things should have been planned in advance and obviously were not. And as to why they weren't, it really boggles the mind.
So clearly there was no plan for proper vaccine distribution by the previous administration. And this is something that Biden and his team have said, that they've had to essentially start from scratch. Trump put all his effort, it seems, into giving money to the vaccine manufacturers to produce the vaccines, which of course was important. The vaccines were produced, but no plan for actual distribution. What could Biden be doing? In fact, we're seeing on Monday, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio published an op-ed in NBC, or rather was late last week, asking for Biden to waive vaccine patents. Now, he's, you know, he's a politician, an elected official. I imagine Biden is facing pressure to do what you would like for him to do, which is waive the vaccine patents. And is this something he could do easily?
Well, he has authority. There's a provision in the Commercial Code 1498 that allows him to override a patent. It's often used in military production, but there is precedent. President George W. Bush threatened to do this with Cipro when we had the anthrax scare. Cipro is considered, or at least at the time was considered, the main cure for anthrax, and we needed large quantities on hand, or so it was thought, because we didn't know how widespread the problem was going to be. But in any case, he threatened, I think it was Bayer was the manufacturer, and they ended up agreeing to produce a huge number at a very low price. So basically, he didn't actually implement 1498, but the threat to do so led to a very low price. So in principle, certainly President Biden could do the same with Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, the other makers of vaccines, and say, look, we want you to license this to anyone who's prepared to do it. Now, just one thing to keep in mind, people point out there is a time lag. You can't tomorrow just suddenly start churning out millions of vaccines from your factory. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like we're about to get over this very soon. So even, I mean, ideally, we would have done this 6 months ago. But let's say we did it tomorrow and we start to get additional vaccines in 2 or 3 months, we could use those here and we should also make them available to the rest of the world. Because again, one point that should be very clear to people, if it's not already, we have to get rid of this pandemic everywhere, because if the idea is, oh, we're going to be fine here in the United States, but oh yeah, they'll have in Latin America and Africa, wherever else, that's their problem. It doesn't work that way, because new strains will develop. And there's a very good chance that if it just festers for 3, 4, 5 years, there'll be new strains, and some of them our vaccines aren't going to be effective against. And then we're just back to where we were last year. You'd have to be absolutely nuts to consider that acceptable. So we really need to eradicate it everywhere in the world, not just as a humanitarian gesture, which we should. I mean, we should care about people dying in Latin America and Africa, but really just for our own good.
So we have a situation now where, just to be clear again, because of the patents, Moderna is the only company that can produce Moderna's vaccine because they hold the patent, Pfizer and BioNTech similarly. But if those patents were waived, then other companies who have the capacity, maybe get some investment from the government, maybe even through the Defense Production Act, set up new factories to start mass producing the vaccines based on the recipes that these companies have developed?
That's exactly right. And again, I'm not saying they could do it tomorrow. There's clearly a time lag. We know the time lag can't be that long because Moderna and Pfizer were ready to produce substantial numbers as of October, say, and the vaccine didn't exist back before February. So February or March. So we know there can't be that long a time lag. And presumably there's some benefit from having done it before. So if they could share in the technology, presumably they could get factories up and running certainly before the end of 2021 and hopefully by the middle of 2021. So again, it would have been best if this was done back in the summer, but it still would be very, very useful to do today.
The idea of eradicating the virus is not one, unfortunately, that we're hearing very much from politicians. We are hearing about mitigation, which is basically managing the virus. Biden's team has already warned Americans to expect another potentially 200,000 deaths. Nearly 100,000 people died in January alone. This was the largest monthly death rate since the pandemic began. And as the virus continues to spread, new variants develop, and we're basically in a losing race against time for the vaccines to be effective. So neither are we doing what it needs to be done in order to get the vaccines deployed as fast as possible. We're also not going to the strict 4 to 6 week lockdowns that some scientists have suggested. We really need to do what's called COVID zero, or arrive at this eradication that other countries have done. You know, China's exporting vaccines because they've essentially taken on an elimination strategy that has largely worked, right?
Well, yes. I mean, it would have been ideal. We came close. We made enormous progress back last spring. And then, unfortunately, we let up on the lockdowns or shutdowns. And what was really unfortunate, of course, that was largely at the push from President Trump. He actually made an effort to undermine states like New York, like California, like Michigan, that were doing the right thing in trying to bring the pandemic under control. He was concerned about the public relations and obviously could not care less about the human cost in terms of disease and deaths. And again, can we go back to that? I think it'll be very, very hard at this point to have anything resembling a full lockdown. Hopefully what we can do is limit the extent to which we have businesses open, most obviously restaurants, but other businesses where people are likely to be in close contact and where it could spread easily, at least until the vaccines can reduce the spread.
But right, and just as an aside, in California, there was an article in the LA Times on Monday showing how the outdoor restaurant ban late last year was responsible for helping to flatten the curve. And unfortunately, California Governor Gavin Newsom has now lifted and is starting to lift that ban on outdoor dining. Now, going back to the issue of the government taking the reins of industry to prioritize human life. Another issue, and I'm not sure if you've written about this, Dean, is N95 masks. When the pandemic first hit, those masks, the most effective masks to stop the spread of the virus, were in huge demand, were scarce. Our healthcare workers didn't have enough to go around. The public was discouraged from getting them because we wanted to prioritize them for healthcare workers. It's nearly a year later. N95 masks masks are still in short supply, still not available in as much as we'd like them to be, fully available for healthcare workers, and not available to the public. These are pretty simple to manufacture. How come our government dropped the ball? Why can't we just go and buy an N95 mask at the local drugstore today?
Yeah, well, this is, again, the Trump administration obviously didn't take anything about this pandemic seriously. So very early on, I mean, this is one of the items that should have been mass produced in very large scale. And insofar, I think it's 3M is the manufacturer. I won't swear to that. But in any case, insofar as they lack the capacity to produce them, we should have arranged, again, using the Defense Production Act, to have other facilities producing them. So that just should not be an issue. I mean, this is life-saving. And obviously, first and foremost, we needed it for healthcare workers. It was incredible. We didn't have stockpiles on hand so that our healthcare workers could be protected really from the very beginning. That was just amazing that they hadn't kept the stockpiles up. But again, recognizing that we need effective masks and they're in short supply, this should have been a priority for the administration. And again, it's just one of many, many failings that it wasn't. By the way, one other thing that I should mention when I was talking about patents, and you probably gave me the opportunity, I just missed it. We paid for the Moderna vaccine. So this is, again, one of the reasons why I think, you know, apart from it being a national health emergency, but we literally paid for the full development. We paid for the research that created the vaccine, its early phase testing and phase three testing. So the ordinary argument that the drug companies give as to why they need patents is that, oh, they put up all this money. Oftentimes it ends up as a failure. In other words, they don't have a successful drug they can market. So when they actually do have one that they can market, they have to make lots of money with a patent monopoly. Now, there's all sorts of issues I could raise with that. I won't. But the point with Moderna is they didn't put up any money. So in the event that they'd gone through the full rounds of testing, they finished phase three testing, the Food and Drug Administration looks at it and they go, well, nothing here. We can't approve it. I mean, that's, of course, bad news for all of us. But Moderna's not out any money in that story. We paid
right. They
for
wouldn't
it.
Have lost anything if the FDA hadn't approved their drug.
That's right. I mean, they wouldn't make as much money as they are now, but they aren't out money. We paid for it. So, yep. You know, it was our money that went down the toilet.
So we paid for it, and yet Moderna owns the patent. Are there other efforts the world over? I mean, the US and Europe are both relying on the Moderna and the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines. Europe is struggling in the same way as the US is. I think it's a little bit further behind than the US in the ability to procure the vaccines and distribute them. But India is producing its own vaccines. China has its own vaccine, although I understand that the third phase clinical trials for the Sinopharm vaccine have not been released yet, or I'm not really quite aware of that. But are there other companies in other countries that might not be as, you know, have governments be as beholden to them, where intellectual property rights will be suspended for a COVID-19 effective vaccine that we can, you know, get to the world in time before the variants take over?
Well, there's also a Russian vaccine, but there too, they've not disclose their at least phase three trial results and very limited results from earlier trials. The China's government has made, to my view, conflicting pledges. Now, I've not seen everything that they've issued, of course, but they have pledged to make their vaccines available as an international public good. Now, what that means, I mean, I know what I would like it to mean. What I would like it to mean is if you could produce it, go ahead and produce it. But I don't know that they've actually allowed anyone to do it. Now, they had a contract, or I shouldn't say had, they do have a contract with the Brazilian government where they're making a large number of vaccines available basically at the cost of production. And they have also transferred the technology to a Brazilian manufacturer. So there's a Brazilian company that will be, if they aren't already, manufacturing one of the Chinese vaccines. So they, to my view, have been generally good actor, although I'll have to say it's really unfortunate that they haven't been fully forthcoming in releasing their trial results, because we'd like to know. They've had it approved, I should say, you know, so Brazil's health agency has approved their vaccine, as has the health agency in Bahrain and Turkey and United Arab Emirates, might be some other countries, I think Egypt. So presumably they've seen the data and decided that it meets their standards of safety and effectiveness. But you really would like them to be fully open so we could see, you know, what exactly is its effectiveness rate? And of course, at least as importantly, how does it differ among groups? Is it as effective among elderly? Do they have side effects? How about people with heart conditions? These are things that you would like to be available for researchers and clinicians everywhere, but they've not been forthcoming for whatever reason. I don't know the reason, but it's really unfortunate.
And then, of course, we have to deal with the fact that there are far too many people who believe that either the virus itself is not real or not serious enough, and or that the vaccine is harmful to human health. Over the weekend in Los Angeles, where we are based, Dodger Stadium, a mass vaccination site, had come to a standstill for about an hour when a number of Trump-supporting anti-vax folks basically protested other people choosing to get the vaccine and didn't get arrested. The Wisconsin pharmacist who's now facing charges for letting 500 vaccine doses spoil is, you know, a conspiracist who believes that the earth is flat. We have millions of Americans, it seems, who are engaged in the kind of cultish, conspiratorial, magical thinking that will probably be a huge hindrance to our ability to recover from this virus, right? Another thing we can lay at the feet of Trump.
Absolutely. I guess I'd point to this three categories. You know, on the one hand, you have minorities, particularly African-Americans, who are suspicious because, you know, frankly, they have some grounds to be suspicious given the history of the medical profession and dealing with them. We have to try to lay those fears. That'll be an effort, but I think that's doable. But, you know, of course, that's very unfortunate so far as you have Blacks who aren't taking a vaccine that could save their lives, save their family members. So that's one, I think it's serious, but I hope it will be overcome. Then we have people who, Trump supporters, many of them, most of them probably, who think that it's some sort of conspiracy, this or that. Again, we have to try, you know, at the end of the day, my view on those people is, look, we'll do the best we can to do what's good for you. But, you know, we're not going to arrest them. You know, that's, you know, again, at some point you sort of have to say, we're going to try our best to tell you what's good for you. If you insist on not believing it, there's only so far we could go. But then separate category, when we have a pharmacist who's keeping people from getting the vaccine, or that protest that you mentioned, that was just infuriating. People are trying to go to get a vaccine to save their lives. And then you have these morons blocking them. You know, if they want to stand on the side, I've taken part in protests. I've gotten arrested. You know, I understand that. You know, you might do that sometimes. They didn't want to get arrested. They just wanted to keep people from getting the vaccine. So if they want to go there and carry a sign, pass out leaflets saying, you know, they could do that. I think that's unfortunate, but they could do that. But you can't block people from getting the vaccine. And when you do that, you should expect to get arrested and spend time in jail. And it's just amazing that, as far as I know, all those people just walked away because they got tired or whatever.
Right. They absolutely did not get arrested. Well, Dean, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your latest piece in the Center for Economic and Policy Research blog, where you write about the issue we've been discussing on vaccine patents. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
My guest has been Dean Baker, senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, which he also co-founded. He's written several books, including Rigged: How Globalization and the Rules of the Modern Economy Were Structured to Make the Rich Richer. His analysis has appeared in many publications, including The Atlantic Monthly, The Washington Post, and more. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.